Thank you. Our next question is from Martin Landry with GMP Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Just to follow up on the capacity expansion, can you share with us right now what is your capacity utilization in Mexico? And with regards to your capacity expansion, are you adding a shift or a production line? Just some more color, that would be great.
Yeah. Good morning, Martin. First, right now, in Juárez 2, we're running the operation. There is some equipment that are running three shifts, 7/24 equipment, not the full factory. But the assembly line is running two full shifts and with extra weekend, I mean, a few Saturday here and there. Then we are reaching the limit. We could add more volume this year if the demand this fall is increasing, but it will be a bit costly because when you do a third shift in Mexico, the efficiency go down. But it's a possibility, and that's why right now we're reaching our limit of our existing capacity, and we decided to invest for next year.
So are you adding a production line?
Sorry. No, we're adding equipment. The assembly line that you saw when we were in URS2 has plenty of capacity. Basically, we're adding manufacturing equipment to manufacture the chassis.
Okay. Okay, and then my second question is on the Spyder. You mentioned that your Spyder inventory is down 15%. I think it was on a year-over-year basis. Perhaps is that a North America number or a global number? And just wondering, are you still working to bring down your inventory levels of Spyder, or are you comfortable where it is right now?
Well, obviously, at the end of April, we're still early in the retail season. We're happy because year over year, the increase was material, and that's what we're working towards. But obviously, the second quarter is the peak retail season for the Spyder product line, and so we're anticipating further reduction of inventory in the second quarter. But when we looked at the trend and we look at our retail versus the actual retail versus our targets, we're in line with what we were expecting. A bit softer in Canada because of the horrible weather we're having here, but overall in line with our plan.
Okay. And what's the mix, current versus non-current?
Well, we had a lot of non-current in Spyder, and that's why we've decided to reduce production. The anticipated retail mix, let's see, of current, non-current in the current year, is expected to be almost 50-50.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Derek DeLay with Canaccord Genuity. Please go ahead.
Yeah, guys. Congrats on a strong start to the year. Can you just give us an update on your new dealer additions and you know, the response to the Performax dealer bonus program?
Yeah, good morning. First, this year, as we've said at the beginning of the year, we're shifting people from expanding the dealer network to improving the dealer network. Then right now, we slow down a bit the signature of new dealers. There will be some addition, but not massively during the year, but we're shifting our effort to make the dealer better. I don't have any number. It's very qualitative, but I would say one thing, more and more dealers are talking about our value proposition. When you consider the quality of our product, the margin opportunity on the product, now the accessories, we're becoming a lot better to design accessories well integrated with the vehicle that we ship at the same time of a new unit. When you consider the whole value proposition that we're offering to the dealers between all product line, we're gaining a lot of traction. And this is a bit difficult to quantify. It's very qualitative, what I'm telling you. But if you talk to dealer, particularly to multi-line dealer, they're pretty happy with BRP those days.
Okay. And then geographically, can you just give us some color on where were some areas of strength and weakness during the quarter?
For sure, the West is more difficult than the East. And for us, it's a bit different, the dynamic between U.S. and Canada. We're quite new in the Southwest of United States. Then even some of our competitors say that their sales is soft in the West. For us, we don't see it as much because we have a lot of new dealer. We entering with the Defender, then the West is pretty strong for us. But in Canada, that's another story. We all been quite strong in Canada, and I will give you some colors. Like the motorcycle industry in the West of Canada is down almost 10%. The East is flattish. Then average Canada is minus mid-single digit, but you see a big difference between East and West. ATV, the West is equal to East, then ETV is different. And watercraft is down mid-single digit, the mid-double digit, minus 15% so far this year. And the East is flattish. Then you can see that Canada is lagging. The West of Canada is lagging versus the East. And that have affected our retail at Q1. As I said in my, the industry was down 5% overall, and we're down 4%. But in the U.S., it's a different dynamic.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question is from Benoit Poirier with Desjardins Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen, and congrats for the good quarter. Can you talk a little bit about your dividend policy, any objective in terms of payout or yield?
Good morning, Benoit. As you saw, it's a first for BRP to announce a quarterly dividend, and the whole discussion of capital allocation has been a recurring topic with the board and a very positive topic with the board. And we decided to launch this dividend with a yield of approximately 1%. As the business will be growing and as our profitability will be growing, our objective is going to be to continue to provide good returns to shareholder. And we will be adjusting the dividend payout in line with the results that we will be delivering. But for now, there's no clear guidance as to how we're going to be creeping up the dividend on a quarterly or annual basis.
Okay, and my follow-up question, if we look at the Spyder retail sales were down mid-single digit in Q1, mainly due to weather in Canada, but can you talk about the progress you're making with your growth strategy and the penetration in the U.S. now that you have José Perrault on board?
Yeah, good morning, Benoit. First, the three-wheel industry was down by about 15%, and we're down low single digit. Then we're quite happy. We're doing better than the three-wheel industry. Then we're quite happy with our performance. Now, if you look the performance on the seven states, and obviously for competitive reason, we do not disclose those seven states. But if you look at the momentum we have in the seven states, it's significantly higher than the rest of the United States. And I think the thing we've discovered that is complicated to resolve, but at the same time, from my saying, it's all about the motorcycle license permit. For many powersport person, to get your motorcycle license, it's quite easy. Everyone has the mindset to do it, but for someone who is a non-non, to get a motorcycle license, the product is intimidating to start with. The class are not well adapted. Then this is probably one of the thing that we're discovering, and we're accelerating the pace to open schools in many states. Just to give you a sense, we have 26 dealers in Florida. Only a few schools were giving course on Spyder. Now we have 23 out of our 26 dealer are team up with the school. Then that's the type of thing we're doing, and we're showing good result. Then it's a bit early to disclose more information, but we're quite happy with those dedicated resources.
Okay, that's my two. Thank you very much for the time.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from Cameron Dirksen with National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning. I guess a couple questions for me on the substantial issuer bid. I guess first I want to ask you about your comfort level with leverage. You know, your leverage will go up, I guess, a bit with buying back the stock. You know, still pretty comfortable level. But if you were to, you know, consider doing acquisitions at some point in the future, I mean, what is your sort of comfort level with leverage now?
Good morning, Cameron. Yeah, we finished the end of the quarter with a leverage ratio of 1.4 times net debt. The SIB should increase leverage by 0.6 times, so it should bring us in the range of 2, let's on a pro forma basis at the end of Q1. Obviously, this year our expectation is for growth in EBITDA and cash generation, so leverage at the end of the year will be down. If you recall, when we did the IPO, we had a leverage of almost 3 times, 2.9 times, and that's a level where we were comfortable running the business. Our credit facilities and our Term B loan is friendly to BRP with a covenant-lite structure and a maturity that is out several years to 2023. And so under these conditions, we're comfortable operating and increasing leverage even further if need be to crystallize an acquisition.
Okay. And just sort of related to the SIB, I mean, obviously you've got a real confidence here in your cash flow generating ability with the introduction of the dividend and also the SIB. I'm just wondering if you can maybe talk about directionally what, you know, CapEx sort of starts to look like after this year, after kind of the you know, a fairly heavy year of investment. I mean, is this a signal that maybe that you know, the biggest part of your investment to support the growth is kind of behind you here, and that maybe investments to support new products and CapEx for production is going to start to trend a little bit lower in the years following this year?
Absolutely not. If there's one thing that's made us successful and we believe that it's going to continue to make us successful is continuing investing in growth, in our organic growth. And so if there's one thing that we're not planning to do is slow down on that strategic pillar of ours. We're a business that's generating significant cash flow every year, and what we're going to be paying or what we've done in terms of normal course issuer bid in the past is using that excess cash flow after CapEx. And so our expectation is not to reduce that pace. And even this year, as you saw, despite that we're launching a dividend, launching the SIB, we've also increased CapEx in our guidance. So so that's the strategy, and we're going to continue working that way.
Okay, that's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Jamie Katz with Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my question. I'm curious about your finished product inventory that's on the balance sheet. It's up pretty significantly, and I wanted to know if there were any different timing differences we should be thinking about or whether it's sort of similar to what's increasing the dealer inventory levels.
Well, actually, yeah, when you look at the inventory year over year, it's up 14%. One of the biggest drivers of the inventory growth is currency. Versus a year ago, the rates are higher, both the euro and the USD versus the Canadian. So that brings about a $30 million increase. Last year, we produced snowmobiles much later in the year. This year, we're producing them as we normally do earlier in the year, and that calls for more raw material and work in process inventory. That's about another $25 million. SSV, with the growth that we're experiencing, is also requiring investment in working cap, around another $20 million there. And then the PWC business, strong growth in PWC this year is driving finished good inventory in international markets. And also raw material inventory for about 15. So if you take these four elements, you're bridging almost the $100 million increase that we have in inventory for the year.
Okay. Okay, thanks. And then I know it's a small component of the business, but I saw you guys had said that the propulsion systems suffered from lower volume of aircraft engines sold. Was that something that was planned, or was it a function of some other industry factor that could be ongoing?
The industry is a bit slow for the aircraft engine, but the main thing is we introduced the 9IS, the 915IS about a year ago, and all the OEM right now are working to prepare their plane to fit this new engine, and will start shipping in the second half. Then the market is soft for aircraft engine, but on top of it, many people are planning to buy the new one because it's a better power to weight ratio, longer range, and that's why we believe there is some delay in the regular engine to wait for the new one.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Seth Wolf with North Coast Research. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Just a couple things. First, I wanted to dive into the capacity. Wondering if you could, one, quantify it, and then just as we think about it, you know, you said you continue to expect to make more investments to support growth going forward. If you're already running multiple shifts, what made you decide that it was right to tweak the existing facility versus adding a new facility? And then kind of just piggybacking off of that, I believe at the Investor Day, you said that eventually you need to go in to Juarez 1 and you can make that more efficient. And I was just wondering if you could remind us of the timeline on that and, you know, maybe what kind of benefit you get there.
Okay. Good morning. You visit Juarez 2, then our facility have capacity on the assembly line. The bottleneck, and you saw yourself, the facility where you have more investment is on the manufacturing of the chassis and the painting of the chassis, and that's where right now we're reaching capacity. Then right now the best return on investment is to improve adding some equipment into the existing wall. We're adding some equipment to increase our capacity on the manufacturing and the painting of the chassis, and at one point we could reach the limit. And as you said, today the old Maverick and the Commander are done in URS 1. Those volume are going down, and in time, when URS 2 is totally full, we could consider to move some assembly to URS 1, but we're not there yet. Then we still have room to grow, and the building itself was planned to have more equipment. We're enlarging a bit the dock, but it's a very minor enlargement. But the manufacturing area that you visited, we're not enlarging the building. We're just adding more equipment into the space to continue to support the growth.
Okay. That's helpful. And this is enough to get you to your long-term market share goal, correct?
We hope. Right now, we will definitely, with what we're adding, it's helping. But we'll see how things go. Like I said, how high is high into the side-by-side industry? You know, we're quite good in the Commander segment, which is a small segment. We're doing okay in the sport. Now we're doing a lot better in the sport. And the Defender for us, which is a big segment, is growing at a fast pace. And again, it's about the industry dynamic, the quality and innovation of our product, and the dealer network expansion. And right now, everything is pointing in the right direction. Then we feel we are okay with what we have had for the next 18 months, and we'll monitor accordingly.
Okay, excellent. And then just lastly, just big picture on the market. I was wondering if you look at the off-road vehicle market in North America specifically, has the dynamics of the overall market changed since the last time we had one of these calls and after the fiscal year was reported? And then, you know, the environment has been very promotional. Have you been forced to match some of the aggressive rebates on the Maverick X3, or have those sharper promotions been limited to the legacy Maverick?
Let's say that the ATV is a bit different than side-by-side. On ATV, there is less new model coming into the market, and except for two OEM that are very aggressive with rebate, I would say it's quite stable, and it's quite the same dynamic than when we had our call in March. On the side-by-side, the dynamic is different. I mean, it's a big market. Now the market is bigger than ATV. Then everyone is introducing new model at a fast pace. Then there is more competitive environment in terms of product. And there is two OEM who are very aggressive with programs because they probably have excess inventory. Then the dynamic is the competitiveness is quite high on the side-by-side market. The beauty of our situation is the extreme, the sport category, is playing into a segment where performance is very, very good, very important, and we have a good product. And on the Defender side, for us, it's a wide space that we're trying to fill fast. And again, our product is well received. Then we are right now benefiting of investment that have been done and move that we decided a few years ago. And we believe we'll continue this momentum or outpacing the industry in the year to come.
Okay, thank you very much. So it sounds like the X3 category, you're kind of immune to some of the discounting that's going on.
Yeah, X3, right now the inventory in the network of X3 is very low.
Okay, excellent. Congrats on an excellent quarter. I look forward to hearing more.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question is from Anthony Zika with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. Josie, could you give us a bit more color about the new dealers that entered your network that have been operating for at least a year, and are they performing to your expectations and their expectations, and are they selling a greater proportion of SSVs?
Good morning, Anthony. I don't have any quantitative numbers, but I give you a feel. It's not black and white. Some are doing extremely well. It's more difficult than what we planned. But overall, I would say that we are on plan. There is one thing that is sure right now. We're gaining space in multi-line showroom store. Since we introduced the Defender, it was a statement. If you remember, I committed to a new side-by-side every 6 months, and it was part of the commitment about the industry. We introduced the Defender. We're launching a new product every 6 months, and the dealers see our new product. They see our value proposition, and we're gaining right now space into multi-line dealership. And this is part of the momentum that we have right now, and that's one of the elements why we are outpacing the industry. But I don't have any more quantitative data that I can share with you.
Okay. And then the second question, you know, over the next 3 years, Jose, what are the two or more catalysts do you see driving future growth, and how important is going to be the success of the Spyder in your plans? I think you mentioned in the past that you would expect potentially to double the sales of the Spyder in a five-year period. So that's my question.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Like we said when we met, we believe, and I answered a question this morning about that, we believe with the six product line that we have, we can reach, if the industry continue like this and we continue to outpace the industry, we believe we could be very close of the $6 billion that we have put as a target in 2020. That being said, and Spyder is part of the growth. And we still believe that Spyder has a good potential. And what we doing right now in the seventh state is really promising, but it's a bit early to try to quantify it. Then at the end of the day, we will continue to gain the two big vector for growth is right now is side-by-side and watercraft. Watercraft, the industry is doing extremely well. There is not too many OEM in that business, and we have a strong, strong market share. Then this is the two main vector. But after that, outboard engine is positioned to grow. ATV, we're gaining momentum. Then there is two business with, we believe, high potential. There is ATV, snowmobile, and outboard engine where we still can continue to grow, but at a lower pace. And there is spider that we believe could, if we find a silver bullet, could make a big difference, but we're not counting on it in our planning. Then this is in a nutshell the how we view the situation.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jose.
Thank you. Our next question is Derek Johnson with BMO Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I was just curious about your comments on snowmobile. If inventory is elevated on prior year stuff, yet your spring sales are stronger than expected, why is that? Why are people not buying the 17s and pre-ordering the 18s early? Is it an expansion of the 850? Is it the shot? What's the difference between the two?
Good morning, Derek. It's lineup. If you remember last year, we came out with the Gen 4 first year with a good model offering. This year, we expanded the model offering, and there is more Rev Gen 4. All the 800 are being replaced, and the shot was very popular. To be honest, shot was more popular than what we had planned. We had bet internally, and I lost my bet, and it's a good thing. But at the end of the day, I believe that the strength of our lineup made a big difference. And basically, we met dealer in February at the dealer meeting. They gave us a booking. The spring order came out stronger than they adjusted the order, and that's why we're increasing our guidance.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you. Our next question is from Tim Conder with Wells Fargo. Please go ahead.
Thank you, gentlemen. Just wanted to follow up on the capacity commentary. Jose, you mentioned that part of that is being driven by, of course, the success you've had with expanding the dealer network, and that currently you're sort of slowing down that expansion to focus on enhancing the existing dealers. So two parts to that. One, what exactly are you doing? Is it more enhancing the just-in-time? Is it enhancing the data analytics CRM that the dealers utilize that you share and work with them? Is that the focus of enhancing the network? And then the second question is, to get to your 2020 goals, will you, after you enhance the current dealer base, will you then hit another second stage of dealer base reaccelerated growth?
Okay, first, to your first question, we're working very hard to generate leads. All our marketing campaign is about lead generation, then sending names to our dealer and trying to help them to close the sales. And some dealers are doing extremely well, taking those leads and convert it in trial and closing the sales, and others are not doing a good job. Then we have all the data. We know all the data of how many leads we transfer to the dealers from our website and what's the end result of those dealers. Then that's why we believe right now that we are probably for the next 2 years in there is more advantage to have lower performing dealers to become better. We believe there is a better return on investment and time doing this, and it's all around efficiency of at the dealership. Then this is the situation. To be honest, we're quite happy with the number of dealers we have right now in North America. There will be always some tweaking, adding 25, losing 25, but we are quite happy. If we continue to outpace the industry, it could happen probably in 2 years from now that we'll be adding more dealers in the remote area to help our coverage, but we do not factor that in at this point in our plan. It's more about number of dealers we have and making them better.
Okay. And along that line, Jose, is there anything related to, again, your just-in-time inventory system? How is that being enhanced, and how is that part of the equation with the, say, CRM enhancements also?
Yeah, this we're quite happy with our system. On ETV and side-by-side, the dealer order on the monthly. What we do right now, we recommend an order to the dealers, and if they follow the recommended order or pass the recommended order, that is the trigger for their Performax bonus. And every month, we give them a recommended order for ETV side-by-side, and that's for deliveries in 2 months. And this is working extremely well. And what we like about that system, it's adjusting up or down depending of the retail. Then there is no big bottleneck of certain model into the system. Then our inventory is quite clean, and we believe we're quite efficient into the industry with the system that we have. We'll continue to improve it, but no major change plan short term.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our last question is from Robin Farley with UBS. Please go ahead.
Great. Thanks. First, I wonder if you could quantify how much of the EBITDA and revenue raise for the year was driven by FX, and then I have a couple other questions, too.
Yeah, when you look at the FX rates, despite that we did get a lift in Q1, when I compare the rates when we issued guidance in March and when we look at the rates today, there's not a lot of variation in the rates. And so there's actually no FX built into our guidance rate, Robin.
Okay, great. And then I think it was at your September Analyst Day, you talked about one of the things that may get you to your 2020 goals would be acquisitions and, you know, maybe perhaps in the dual-purpose motorcycle market. Is announcing the share repurchase today and the dividend announcement, I mean, it looks like you still have free cash flow available to do acquisitions, but are those uses of your free cash flow, should we think of that as making an acquisition less likely in your strategy now?
No, absolutely not. For us, it's optimization of the balance sheet. That's why we're looking at doing the SIB and returning capital to the shareholders. We have $255 million of cash at the end of Q1. Obviously, we want to put that cash to work for the shareholders, and that SIB was the best way to put it to work for them. As I mentioned, when I look at the balance sheet, we do have that flexibility to add additional debt if need be, if we were to do a material acquisition. And so that doesn't reduce our abilities to execute on material M&A going forward.
Okay, no, great, that's helpful. And then when we look at when you present Spyder retail versus the industry, I think in previous quarters to this, you would show it kind of versus the North American motorcycle industry overall. I think this quarter, now you're showing it kind of versus the three-wheel market. I wonder if you could just give us a little context the way you sort of typically have about the change versus the North American motorcycle market overall.
Yeah. Good morning, Robin. Since the beginning of this fiscal year, we're following internally the three-wheel market. Obviously, we follow both, but we believe that the three-wheel market is a lot more relevant for what we're doing than the motorcycle market, where you have a lot of entry-level product. Then if you look at the industry overall season to date, if you take the whole motorcycle market, it's down mid-single digit, where the three-wheel market is down almost 15%. And we right now are down minus single digit. Then we're doing as good or as bad as the motorcycle industry, but better than the three-wheel market.
Okay, no, great. That's helpful. And then my last question is, can you quantify where your side-by-side market share is now and kind of versus your goal? I think you had given like a 2 or 3 year goal, so if you could help us think about where your market share is now.
Yeah, like we said before the launch of the Defender, we said that we were about 10%, And we said at the time that with all the new product that we're introducing, that the goal was to become a strong number two. Then we are halfway. We said midterm. We are halfway into this time frame. But right now, we are growing at a good pace. We are about 15% of the industry, and we believe that we are growing at a good pace to be able to meet our goal. But there is, I would say, another 2 years to go.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. Deschaine.
Thank you, Valérie, and thanks, everyone, for joining us this morning and for your interest in BRP. We look forward to speaking with you again for a second quarter conference call on September 1st. Thanks again, everyone, and have a good day.
Thank you, gentlemen. The conference has now ended. Please disconnect your lines at this time, and we thank you for your participation.